And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm down to dunk.
And I'm down to dunk. I'm down to dunk. This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Shea Gibbs-Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lindy Waters, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Kenneth Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to dunk.
Will you say this is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort?
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, on Wednesdays, is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, oh, what's up?
What's up, Andrew?
Alex, a little under the weather today, but toughen it out just for the dunkers.
Just for the dunkers.
Alex was, he's questionable heading into this podcast, just like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is questionable tonight against the Spurs with a left hip contusion.
That was nasty.
It looked real bad. And the way he laid on the ground afterwards, too. I was getting like some Andre Robertson vibes, you know, from the way he was laying down. I was like, oh no, this is not good. But he popped up, played the rest of the game, almost won that game. I know like a lot of the talk, and I've been a part of the talk, is like, oh man, Herb Jones was great. This is great. And I know the last 2 minute report said that was a block. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it was. Last 2 minute report doesn't matter. The Thunder lost the game, but they had a chance to win that. And it was all because of Shea.
Yeah. Like, I totally agree that the Herb Jones and the Pelicans just in general probably played Shea better than any team we've seen.
No question.
Like, or at least collapsed more on him more than any team.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about as the theme of, like, these last 2 years. It's just everyone collapses in the paint when Shea goes in there. But I was rewatching it last night, and there were some screenshots where it looked like all five Pelicans were in the paint with Shea, and then you had the other four Thunder guys
as they should, the perimeter. As they should,
for sure. And you know, credit to her for making that last call close enough where the refs didn't know what to do. But the takeaway for me was like, and Shea still got 30, like despite all of that. Despite all of that incredible defense, Shea still got his points. It kind of felt like the way we talked about PJ Tucker 2 years ago in the playoffs guarding Kevin Durant, where like everyone was talking about, oh my gosh, PJ Tucker's making it so hard on Kevin Durant. This is incredible defense. And you look at the box score and it's like Kevin Durant's still getting his points.
Yeah.
He's still doing all his Kevin Durant things. It felt very similar to that. Totally credit. If that was a 7-game series, like Shea would be exhausted by the end of it.
Yeah.
I am sure.
Yeah.
But you got to give credit to Shea for like, and that was probably his biggest test so far.
Yeah. And he still had over 30. I mean, it's,
and he still did.
It feels like watching young James Harden, honestly.
Like, where it's just kind of inevitable.
Yeah. Like you can make him do it differently. You know, you can make it harder on him, but he's still going to get there. He is still going to get where he wants to go and make it happen one way or another. Hey, if you're crowding me, I'm going to make you foul me. If everybody's collapsing on me, you are going to foul me. And he has done such a good job. He didn't do this last year or the year before at all. But now he's using his arms a lot better in the lane and using his length to get fouled. And he's also doing the James Harden throwing his head back stuff too, which annoyed us for years, but it works. And it gets him.
And I don't know what it is. And it just looks cooler when Shay does it, you know?
Ah, it's just so much more smooth, and it's just more beautiful when he does it. When James did it, it was annoying, you know? Now it's just a beautiful act of basketball. Yeah, no, I mean, he is a superstar, and you're already hearing it. Like, Charles Barkley's out there saying that he should be a starter. On the All-Star team, a starter. Starter in the NBA, yes. Yeah. Starter on the All-Star team. It's just astonishing the jump that he's made. And all the while, you know, the Thunder do not have a good record. They're projected by 538 to be one of the worst five teams in the league by season's end. And this is kind of where you are. But if you're a Thunder fan, honestly, you kind of have to be okay with that, because obviously you have Chet waiting in the wing, which is great. But like, everybody else is really a long ways away, and it's because of age. When they're playing with several rookies. They're playing with really, really young guys, and everybody's really far away. And that's all right. Like, that's a part of this plan, but it just takes time. And if you can add like another like true building block to this team, and maybe you get lucky in the lottery. I mean, if you give yourself top five odds, like, that's, I don't know, you can get there. It's possible that you rise up, or maybe even if they fell to like sixth or seventh, as a Thunder fan, like, you have to be feeling pretty good about what Sam could do at that spot.
I'm still pretty skeptical that they will really end up in the fifth spot, just because I feel like none of these other teams have Shea, and if Shea's going to be playing and is healthy, mm-hmm. OKC's going to pick up some wins. I mean, the hard thing, though, which I'm now realizing, is that there's just like, there's no trends with this team. Like, the last two games, the Houston game and the New Orleans game, mm-hmm. for people out there, you know, at the beginning of the season, the story was, wow, they're terrible on offense again, but the defense is back. Like, yeah. The defense is looking good. Even in that stretch, they only had one game where they scored fewer than 100 points per 100 possessions, and that was the game against Milwaukee.
Yeah.
The first one that everyone remembers. It was like their first bad game. Mm-hmm. I think they lost by 14 points. Like, Milwaukee's defense was just like on point that entire game, and they just destroyed them. The last two games, they've scored under 100 points per 100 possessions against Houston and against New Orleans. And just seeing their offense be that bad over two games, you have to like throw out the last 2 weeks now. And it's like, well, I guess that wasn't a trend. Like, I guess they didn't suddenly figure out something on offense, because now they've reverted back to something even worse than what they were at the beginning of the season. And so it's hard for me to like predict what this team's going to do next, because it feels like they've had three different phases. Like, they had the good defense, bad offense.
Yeah.
Then they had the good offense, bad defense phase. And now they're in this, like, I mean, honestly, it's bad, both
bad, bad stage.
Yeah. Yeah. Although they were pretty good defensively against New Orleans, yeah. But they were not against Houston. I'm so glad the Houston game was the first game this season where I wasn't able to watch live. And so I was following along, and I was like, all right, this looks bad, but I'll check in the third quarter, because that's when they make their run. I'm sure it'll be fine.
It was bad.
And then when I saw it wasn't, I was like, I'm not watching that game.
Yeah.
I'm not touching that game.
Yeah, that was easily their worst game of the season. Yeah. And they'll have a stretch this season where their offense and their defense, you know, is good.
That'd be neat, just to see what it looks like.
I think that will happen. I don't know how long that stretch will be, but that will happen. But yeah, I mean, nobody hit shots in that game, you know.
Yeah, it feels like the only thing you can count on right now is Shea night to night.
And Poku. Yeah.
What'd you say?
And Poku. That's all.
You know? No, you can't even count Poku. I felt, God, Poku, that play that got him removed from the game early.
That was
so bad.
There are a couple Poku gaffes in that game at the end there, whenever Herb threw it off his back, too. It's like, oh no, Poku, no!
You know, I guess Herb isn't like an amazing free throw shooter, though.
I know, he knocked them both down, though.
More risky for Herb. I mean, credit for him for, you know, having the confidence in his free throw shot.
Yeah,
I was like, are you sure you want to do this?
He did
What's he shooting? He's shooting 73%. Okay, he's not as bad as I thought.
No, he's not terrible. I mean, he's a good player, man. That was pretty impressive.
But credit to Poku, he did get to come back in the game. Mark did not sit him down forever.
Yeah.
He ended up playing 27 minutes.
It's a good sign that he's not going to the G League, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, night to night, it feels like Shea's going to get 30, and that's really the only thing I feel good about.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Jeremiah was really good against the Pelicans.
He was.
Played 34 minutes that night. He hit that big three. I feel bad for Jeremiah because he hit that giant three, and it was almost erased like immediately by Zion on the other end. But like that had potential to be the winning three of the game. And it was like, I think it's a forgettable moment now, but I feel bad for him because it was like that could have been something for him. And it was really kind of a cool shot. Good job, Jeremiah, but didn't really matter.
And it was a nice game for him because we needed him, because with Valanciunas and Zion, like that is one of those lineups where if you want to do that Poku J-Dub starting lineup, like good luck.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you have to play JRE. And he really showed up.
They didn't play Jonas that much. They only played him 20 minutes in that game.
Well, because he made so many dumb fouls early in that game.
He only had two fouls.
I know, but those fouls came very quickly. And I feel like that affected him. And when the New Orleans kept playing better, they just were like, okay, well, I guess we won't put him back in.
Yeah.
Because when he was in there, he looked like he was going to destroy us. But he was swinging his elbows too much. And I think he got like two offensive fouls.
Yeah. It's like when I'm playing basketball with my kids, you know, like I can't get too rough with them. I can't get too aggressive. I can't be swinging my elbows everywhere, you know.
Refs are watching.
They're like, hey, you gotta sit down. You gotta sit down. You can't do this against these children out here like Poku. But yeah, it really does feel like night to night. Like you'll get maybe a great Josh Giddey game. Giddey had a great start to the game and then just kind of disappeared from action. Like he played 28 minutes. I think I remember 12 of them. You know.
Yeah. He was so good to start the game.
He was amazing. He had 7 points in the first quarter.
And they were all good, especially like that that drive where like Zion's just on his hip the entire time.
Yeah.
And he goes in. Like that was awesome. And those are the types of plays that we want to see from Giddey, who has actually been finishing quite well around the rim.
Yeah.
I will say.
Yeah.
He's not down in Dortland. I think Dort's at like 56% right now.
Down in Dortland.
So, yeah, I was feeling great about that. And then you look at the end of the game and he's 3 for 9. And it was like, oh, those were those three plays. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Josh Giddey, 62% from 0 to 3 feet this season.
Better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Dortland, 59%, which is not.
Wait, 59%?
Mm hmm.
You must be looking at... What are you looking at?
Basketball Reference, 0 to 3 feet.
I don't like that. 0 to 3 feet.
You want restricted area only?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Because I think that actually captures what Dort's problem is better.
You mean the fact that he gets there and just has only muscle to get the ball into the hoop, and sometimes it just careens off the backboard?
That and a lot of his shots end up being from like right at the edge of the restricted area.
Yeah, true.
I mean, he shot, I don't know if you remember the like floater he shot against, I want to say it was like Hernan Gomez in that game.
Yes.
Where it just went like straight up in the air.
Yeah. I don't know that he meant to do that.
Okay. I mean, that, I would,
the way that
I would
it
say
looked,
that as well.
The way that it looked, I don't think he meant for that to happen. Yeah. but I don't know. Yeah, it's been a rough go for all the non-Shea guys, you know, in different spots. And there's been spots where it's looks like, oh my gosh, we have too many guys. And now, you know, there's this pocket of time where it's like, oh my gosh, do we have any guys?
Yeah, you know? That was definitely a game where it was like, okay, this idea of having all these guys who can be ball handlers and make decisions is really cool.
Yeah.
But somebody else needs to be able to make the defense worried about anything.
Yeah.
Because that game in particular, it felt like Shea driving into five guys was our best offense.
Yeah.
Like that's what he should have been doing, because when anyone else tried anything, it was most of the time was not working.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, like I still want to see so much more from J Dub, because I feel like he's the guy,
mm-hmm.
in addition to Josh, which we can talk about Josh too, mm-hmm. but he's the guy where I feel like based on his role in college, he should be the type of guy who could be, who could have some primary ball handler minutes, yeah. which he has, but I just see more.
Yeah.
Because I think he can be one of those guys.
Yeah, they like to play him with the good players, and the good players all handle the ball. So
yeah,
it's kind of rough. Okay, so I have the restricted area numbers. Yeah. Let's go down the list of the best to worst in the restricted area for the Thunder.
So I know that J Dub is very high.
Yes, J Dub is fourth. 69.8%.
That's great.
It's very nice. The top three are limited attempts. So the other Jalen Williams is number one at 80%, but he just hasn't taken very many. Mike Muscala, yeah. get well, Mike Muscala, 75%.
Yeah.
And Kendrick Williams is 72.5% in the restricted area this year.
So really, J-Dub being that high is impressive.
It's very impressive. Okay, after J-Dub, who do you think is next?
Shai.
Shai is not. He is a little further down the list at 66.4%.
That's still good, though.
Still good.
I know that Dort is at like 56%. I know that
he is at 56.
62%.
Yes.
I'm trying to think. Where's Trey?
Trey's
He's kind of limited minutes, though.
68% at the rim.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's something, because his shot is not going down.
Yeah, elsewhere, it's not quite as good. From the corners, Trey is 33%. From above the break, he's 27% on the season.
Yeah, and more concerning is just what the misses have looked like, especially in that last game.
Yeah, I still just wonder if his back is still bothering him.
What was his injury?
Back soreness.
Back soreness. So that could be spasms. It could be a lot of things,
Could be a lot of things. I don't know what it is, but I'm willing to give him more time before I'm like, you know, trade.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just he had looked so good at parts of like preseason, early season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he looked one of the best.
We had conversations like, oh, he has taken his next leap, whatever that is.
Yeah.
No. And it's just that. And since he got hurt and then starting to try to come back, it's just been a slog, Andrew.
Yeah, it's been rough. I feel bad for him. But
because he's another one of those guys who can do some of that primary ball handler stuff.
Yeah, the defense could care about him. He's like one of the few guys that the defense could actually care about. But
yeah,
you know, it's not happening. So, yeah, Trey is 68% in the restricted area. Usman Jang, 66%. In the restricted area. Let me pull up the totals, because like the per games just don't do a lot for me.
Yeah.
Because it's got to be very limited. Yeah, Trey is 17 of 25 in the restricted area.
Uh-huh.
We missed Poku, who's also 69% in the restricted area.
Yep.
36.
Poku's been good.
36
around the rim.
36 of 52. The only place where Poku is not shooting well is in the mid-range. But he's not taking very many. You know, he's 3 of 9 in the mid-range. And then he's 5 of 23 in, like, the non-restricted area paint twos.
Yeah.
So that's not great. But he's taking most of his shots from three and at the rim, which is great. That's exactly what you'd want.
I mean, we talked about how, like, night to night, you don't really know who's going to show up. And I think that can lead to some pretty wild overreactions night to night.
Yeah.
Because someone like Poku can have a bad game,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of just like revert back to how you felt about him last year. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at the big picture, you see like, okay, he's definitely like improved.
Yeah.
And it's the same with a lot of these guys, where like night to night, it can look rough. But then when you look at the big picture, it's like, okay, these guys are improving. They're just not all hitting on the same night yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no consistency. I mean, that's just I keep saying it, and I'm sounding like a broken record, but this is just a young team. This is the way young teams perform. It's like they're just all over the place. You don't know what to expect. And like,
what does that mean?
What do you mean?
Sound like a broken record.
Where I'm just like repeating myself, you know. Young
team. Oh, is that
young
team. Is that what
young
they
team.
Do?
Young team, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, that was a Zach Lowe question.
That was a very Zach Lowe. Okay. Continuing on with the restricted area. Shea is 66%. Giddy is 62%. Eugene, 11 of 18, 61%. Jeremiah is 58%.
It's rough
in the restricted area. 36 of 62. Yeah, that's not great. Dort, as we mentioned, 56%. 54 of 96 in the restricted area. That feels right, you know?
Oh, it does. He's putting up quite an inefficient season so far.
Who are the two worst in the restricted area this season?
So thinking about who you have not named, Wiggins?
Wiggins is second worst, 55%. He's 20 of 36 in the restricted area.
Wow, that's no good.
And then the worst is?
And then the worst is Lindy Waters.
Well, Lindy has not taken a shot in the restricted area this season.
So technically,
pretty bad. Pretty terrible.
If you can't
even
get the shot off?
Can't even get there. I mean, technically, Isaiah Joe would be the worst. He's 0 of 1.
Oh. Yeah.
But I remember the play. He actually went to the bucket and he missed it but got fouled. So,
okay, so we'll count that as one. So he's actually the best.
Yep. I've now named every player on the Thunder but one guy.
Who could it be? Who could it be? Guard?
Big. Change his number.
Oh, Bazley. Oh, yeah. Bazley's shooting like 45% or something.
He's 48.9%. He's 22 of 45 in the restricted area this year.
Yeah, that is one of those stats that feels red flaggy. Because for a big to be shooting under 50% at the rim, you just like don't even know how it happens. But then you remember how Bazley goes to the rim. And it's like, oh, okay, it actually does make sense. Now, it'd be helpful to get a rim percentage that includes like how often they get fouled. Not that I think that would help Bazley that much, but
yeah, it would. I mean, that's where like the context of like even the Isaiah Joe 0 for 1 is like I don't remember everybody's shots in the restricted area. Like you just can't.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be nice to know. Or if you could, you know, click on those numbers like you can in the box scores and see all the restricted
area
shots.
Yeah, that's a crazy low number though for a big.
It is, it's
that's tough.
It is bad. It is bad. And some of it is that he still does his Bazley time drives, you know?
I know, but I've kind of felt like those are, I mean, you still see them, yes, but you get like one or two a game.
Yeah, max. Well, there's two misses. You know, there's two misses in his, I don't know, he's not taking very many shots per game.
No, he's not.
You know, like you got to cut out all of the Bazley time. If he wants to make it here, he's got to cut that out. I mean, he's taking five shots a game, you know?
Yeah.
He's 43% from the field so far this season. Wow. I mean, it's wild. I mean, if I would have told you that, you know, Poku is going to shoot, you know,
like 25 percentage points better or something.
So, I mean, it's insane how much better Poku has been than Bazley this year on both ends. I mean, he's just been better. And I know Bazley's been a good defender. But he's not like some crazy defender that's impacting everything so much that you just have to keep him out there. You know, he's not Andre, you know, where he's shutting guys down. I mean, he's definitely good. And I think that he belongs in the NBA, but I mean, what would you put his odds of being on the team in March?
I'd actually still have him pretty high. I because they don't have a lot of bigs to play, I don't feel like there's this pressure to trade Bays to open up minutes. I mean, I would like to see other guys playing. You know, like the fact that Wiggins like just doesn't get consistent minutes on this team, maybe that would be one way to get him consistent minutes. But there's also a downside to that, which is that he's probably playing out of position at that point, and maybe that isn't the best for Aaron Wiggins to be playing power forward every night.
Well, I think that you want to get I think at some point you want to get a look at Jay Will in the NBA, like a longer look. Like he's doing really, really well in the G League.
Is he?
Yeah. I mean, he's...
I don't know.
Like, night to night, dishing out a ton of assists. I mean, he's been really good. I need to look up his G League stats, but every time I look at the box scores, he is playing really well. Like, he's one of the better players on the blue when he's down there. You know, I think that he deserves a chance to get an extended look. And I think, like, later in the season, especially, you know, what we saw from the Thunder at the end of last season... he absolutely should get an extended look against NBA guys.
Yeah, but I think that could end up being they're just sitting Bays at some point if they want to get him those minutes. Like I don't think they're going to get anything in a trade.
Well, I know. I'm not expecting that either. I mean, I think that maybe he could get some kind of protected second for him, you know.
Because any team that brings him in, they either have to like him so much that they want to give him an extension, or they have to like let him play out next season and then he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I know. It's, and maybe there is nothing there, and they just hold on to him and just see whatever.
Yeah.
In the G League, Jay Will, 14 points, on 61% from the field. 46% from three. He is averaging 9 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, and half a block a game.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's kind of like their facilitator for that team because they don't really have a point guard. They've got like Jamias Ramsey is like this bucket getter for them.
Yeah,
and handles the ball a lot for them. So they kind of use when Jay Will's down there as their facilitator at the elbow. And he's pretty fun to watch. I mean, he's definitely a fun player. But yeah, I think at some point he'll get a chance to play more minutes, and we won't have the Kalitzakis minutes on our hands.
Yeah, I'd like to see someone else with some offensive chops come up and give them a shot. These last games have just hurt me so bad. I just want to see like some kind of functional offense, which again,
yeah.
Before those last two games, they were like, you know, top 10, top 5 over a short stretch in offense. So it was clicking for a time.
Yeah.
It's just cratered.
Yeah. Well, you're saying that, and there's a chance that Shea doesn't even play tonight against the Spurs. And
that game's going to be disgusting no matter what.
What could be the grossest game of all time? Or, I mean, it could be a night for Josh Giddey to get his footing a little bit, to have the ball, you know, more full time, and to see what that looks like. You know, Josh has been up and down, and, you know, we're not that far removed from the Giddey game in New York, where it was just like, oh, man, like he looks amazing with the way he's playing. And the game he had against Boston, like he was awesome in those games. And, you know, I'd like to see what he looks like as the full-time guard. I also think he needs to continue to try to fit in and find his spots. I thought the way he played in Boston was like the perfect iteration of Giddey with the Thunder. It's like he's facilitating, he's rebounding, he's really physically into the game. I mean, those are the kind of things that you want to see from him. And he just... is still learning how to do that, which for a 20-year-old, you know, that's okay. Yeah,
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
The Thunder currently are 25th in net rating, -2, only ahead of Orlando, Houston, Charlotte, Detroit, and San Antonio. So that's their sixth in the reverse standings in net rating. Defensively, they are 18th in the NBA, 112.3. And then on offense, they are 21st. 110.2. So that's the numbers of a bad team right there. Numbers of a young team. So what do you think about those numbers whenever you see them?
I mean, I still feel better about their performance than this season than any of those other teams you mentioned.
Yeah.
Sorry, my snot is like
sorry
somehow man. in my mouth. It's making it hard to talk.
Yeah, well, I mean, you say that, and you're correct in that their net rating at -2 is a way better than those other five teams. Orlando's -5.6, Houston's -6, Charlotte's -6.5, Detroit's -8.6, and San Antonio's -10. So they are five times better than what the Spurs have been this season.
And it's also like the clutch minutes. Like, they are tied with Miami Heat, with the Miami Heat, for the most clutch time minutes in the league right now.
Yeah.
Like, so many of their games are coming down to the wire. My uncle is out here, and he's never watched the Thunder.
Uh-huh.
And he just happened to watch the two overtime games.
Oh.
And then that New Orleans game, which almost went to overtime.
Yeah, very fun.
And so he's thinking like, oh, this team is so competitive tonight. This is incredible. But it's true. That's kind of how it's been this whole season. That Houston game is such an outlier. And of course it was against Houston, but like compared to the rest of the season, that game was such an outlier.
Yeah.
This team has been so competitive compared to these other teams. And that's why I'm like hesitant to just kind of write off the season in terms of them. Like, we got to start thinking about them as being part of this bottom five.
Yeah.
Just because and a lot of that is Shea.
Yeah.
Because Shea can just keep you in games by getting to the line in a way that like those other teams don't have guys that can do that. And so I don't know. I'm still like, I'm not willing to let go of the rope yet, is I guess what I'm saying. I'm holding on for dear life. Not that I like even like want the Thunder to like make a play and push. It's not about that. It's just, I think this team is significantly better than they were last year.
Yeah, the numbers say so. I just wonder how many teams
they do, but I don't even think the numbers reflect it as much as I think they should.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for everything to catch up, and maybe that will happen by like the new year, and then we'll look at it and I'll feel one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But yeah. if they still have a negative 1.2 net or point differential,
yeah,
I think that's what it is at the new year, like that's wildly impressive.
Yeah.
Compared to where they have been the last couple of years. Because that means that they've kept up this like super competitive night to night play where they're fighting with these teams down to the very end, racking up these clutch time minutes. I mean, I posted the stat like 2 weeks ago. 2 years ago, they only had like 100 clutch time minutes in 82 games. They've had 68 in 13 games this year.
Yeah.
Like it's just a different brand of basketball that we are watching this season.
Yeah, it's kind of the ideal. Like, if the Thunder are going to be the sixth worst team in the league, it's the ideal way to watch them, you know, throughout the season. It's like, yeah, let's watch them be in these close games. Like, sometimes they win, sometimes they lose. I mean, I posted this yesterday that Shea leads the NBA in clutch points.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess it's more just like, you know, we talked about going into the season. Like, we kind of projected them to be in that, like, 6-8 range.
Mm-hmm.
And I agreed with that. And you agreed with that. Like, mm-hmm. we thought they would be better, that they're still going to be in that, like, you know, early to mid lottery. And I guess the experience of living through that just makes me feel like, wow, but you can still be kind of like a solid team at that level. Like, that doesn't mean that you're just a bad team again.
Yeah.
And so I just want to recognize that while acknowledging the fact that, yeah, they're still not going to make the play, and they're probably still going to be like the 6th through 8th, you know, best odds in the reverse standings, because I do think that's ultimately a more important story to tell, like what the strides the team has made this season are more important than just lumping them together with these other teams,
yeah,
who I just don't think have made that sort of mini leap, and it is like a mini leap because it's not like they're jumping to the play-in.
Yeah, also. You know, we got to stay humble a little bit, like the you know, Houston and Detroit made us feel this season. It's like
it's so annoying that those are the games that we drop.
It's like, why don't we just stupid. Can we not just lose to Washington like that? Like, no one cares.
I'd rather lose to the Wizards by maybe not the Wizards, but I'd rather lose to any other team by like 40.
Yeah, Toronto or anybody.
The Raptors beat us by 40, but just beat Houston.
Yeah, the Nuggets, you know, let's not go to overtime with the Nuggets. Let's get beat by 30 by the Nuggets and, you know, let's just call it a day. Let's go win in Houston, you know.
Now, I know if you're, you know, focusing on the tank, that those are obviously good losses because if it ends up that they're somehow, like, if it falls apart, if everything goes off a cliff and they lose every game here on out, it's good that they wouldn't have that tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Or I guess that they would have that tiebreaker over Houston.
Yeah.
Or Detroit. But yeah, in the moment, those games hurt more.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they do. The Thunder, their schedule gets really tough. You know, after tonight, they play San Antonio, which is, they've been far and away the worst team in the NBA this season. But they might be playing without Shea. And so that could be a very competitive basketball game if that's the case. But then they go on the road for 5 games. Minnesota, who will be without Towns, but like that might end up being not the worst thing in the world for the Timberwolves because it could help them like develop some kind of identity, you know.
Yeah, what day is that? Is that Friday?
In this month or so, Saturday. Yeah, they play tonight and then they don't play again until Saturday. So that should give enough time, you would think. If Shea's questionable now and not listed as out, that perhaps like his hip will have some time to heal. Until then, and then they're on the road for an additional 4 games after they leave Minnesota. They're in Atlanta on Monday, December 5th. They are at Memphis. They're at Memphis Wednesday, December 7th. They're in Cleveland Saturday, December 10th, and then Monday, December 12th, they're in Dallas. So that is a tough road trip. I don't know what their record will be in those 5 games. Minnesota, Atlanta, Memphis, Cavs, Mavs. To me, that feels like a road trip where you'd be lucky to get 2 out of 5. Mm-hmm. What's your feel for that, Al?
Yeah. Although, you know, if that stretch was like Houston, Detroit, Orlando, San Antonio, we would think, oh, they're going to go like 4-1. And then it would end up being like 2-3. And so
yeah,
that's my thing. I don't, just because that looks like a hard stretch, they're going to play a lot of those teams really closely.
Yeah.
And if any of those teams are faltering at all, like they could beat Dallas. Dallas has been so up and down.
They already have beat Dallas in Dallas.
Yeah,
they've already done that.
Miracle.
Yeah, they've already done that. And so, yeah, I mean, you look at the wins that they've had. They beat the Clippers twice. They beat the Mavericks. They beat the Magic. They beat the Raptors, Knicks, Wizards, and Bulls. Those are the teams that they beat. And I'd look at all of those and say, some of those are a toss-up at best. You know?
Yeah. Actually, now that you read them out, though, those are all kind of like mid-tier teams.
That's what I'm saying, like a toss-up. Like, it's not, yeah, like none of those feel like they're going to get steamrolled, you know, by those teams. But yeah, Chicago's like been not very good this year. You know, New York has been up and down. We've seen that. We saw the game in New York, and then we saw them here where they, you know, beat the Thunder pretty easily.
Yeah. So if we go with that, just targeting those mid-tier teams, it would seem like the Minnesota game and Dallas game would be the games when they'd have the best shot.
Atlanta.
In this five-game stretch.
Atlanta.
Yeah, I guess Atlanta's been worse lately. They've lost 3 in a row.
Yeah. But yeah, Memphis, Cleveland. I mean, that's tough. And all on the road. That's the problem with the Mavs game, though, is that it's the fifth game of the road trip. That you can chalk a lot of those up to schedule losses, you know, at the last game of a road trip. So I worry about that one. And Luka's just ridiculous. But then they play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games at home in a row.
See, that's where what's going to happen is they're going to go like 1-4 or 0-5 on this road trip.
Yeah.
Everyone is, the entire fan base will shift into tank mode,
mm-hmm,
because by that point, what would they be? They'd be like, let's say 1 tonight. So they'll be like 9-18, 9 games below 500.
That's not good.
Yeah, but it's also like very possible. They'll be 9-18. We'll be back at the bottom, and we'll be saying, okay, let's start watching some college basketball. And then they're going to go on this homestand, 7 games, sleeping in their beds every night. And I bet they're going to do great.
Yeah.
I don't even care who the opponents are.
Yeah. So 30 games in last year, do you know what they were?
They were probably like 10-20.
Yeah, they're 11-19.
Okay.
And they have like a very good chance to be that again, 30 games in.
Yeah, we'll see. I bet they'll be like 13 or 14 wins.
Yeah, which I think is on par with where they've been. It's like there is improvement that's happened. Obviously, like the biggest improvements are Shea playing the way that he's played, and then Poku playing the way that he's played, and then you'll see flashes from everybody else here and there. But yeah, they've been an improved squad. I'd like to know if Shea misses any games too, because that will obviously very much affect, you know, what happens with this team, and that obviously matters a ton. But
it will. But you could imagine a scenario where, if Shea has, you know, because he broke his butt or whatever, if he has to be out for a couple games, that could easily be the thing that like jumpstarts Giddy's season.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Last season, I mean, the way that Giddy played with Trey Mann last year when Shea was out was like, oh gosh, like it could jumpstart both of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Giddy, what have you thought about the reaction to Giddy? Because it got to the point where Giddy liked a tweet.
Yeah, I mentioned this on Monday. I mentioned this Monday where it's like the criticism of Josh Giddy has been weird or something like that. I just think that he's young and that he's improved in scoring at the rim and the way that he gets his shots has improved, but he also has a lot more turnovers this year. And, you know, I think teams have picked up on the way that he passes the ball. And
yeah,
so I just think that this is, I would just call this an adjustment period for Josh. I think it's unfair to necessarily like criticize him as like a player and not like try to contextualize it a little bit, but like that's Twitter. Like Twitter doesn't care about context. It cares about like stats and, you know, how you play in one particular game. You know, that's, I just think that's just the way that this is.
Yeah, if these games were happening last March, I don't think anyone would like bat an eye. Like if these were just part of his rookie season, because he's played 72 games now, he has 10 more games to go to officially like have an 82 game sample.
Yeah,
and you know if you look at his per 36 numbers comparing last season to this season, because you know he's playing slightly fewer minutes than last year.
Yeah,
like his scoring's up. You know, rebounds are about the same. Assists are a little down and turnovers are a little up. Like, that's been the main thing. He's shooting better overall. He still can't shoot from three.
Mm-hmm.
All of that has come back down from the early season. I don't know. It feels like very in line, actually, with where you should expect him to be.
Yeah.
And even with something like, now, I don't know how accurate these are, but Basketball Reference has turnovers as you can split them into bad pass,
mm-hmm.
which that's what it's felt like. It's felt like all of those amazing passes that we saw last season for Josh, all of a sudden getting picked off.
Yeah.
Or they're just not getting to their final destination for some other reason. He's averaging the same amount of bad passes as he did last year. He had 108 in 54 games last year, two per game. He's had 36 in 18 games this year, two per game. So like there's so much about his season that is what he was as a rookie, which really makes sense when you look at his age and his games played, but it just feels different. And you kind of just have to like step back for a second, because as good as we thought his rookie season was, I mean, we came out of that rookie season feeling pretty good about Josh Giddey.
Felt great.
He's now doing largely the same thing with slightly improved scoring,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like the sky is falling.
I think it's just that with the insane jump that Shea has made.
Yeah.
That is like now their games are so disproportionate in that Shea is like in this like pre-prime, like entering his prime play.
Yeah.
And Josh is just so far away from it still. Like we just have to recognize that like they're 4 years apart, you know?
Yeah.
And Josh is, he's so far away from being a finished product that I'm just like not willing to like go there with any sort of like, oh, he's not, this game isn't as scalable as like other players and he's not this. And I'm just, you know, I worry about the future of Josh Giddey. Like he's 20 years old and he is, it's not like he's Poku the last 2 years where it's like, man, I don't know if he's an NBA guy.
Yeah.
Like Josh is clearly an NBA player that's going to play in the NBA for a long time. And now it's all about development. And like, this is where the real work gets put in. This is where, like, this is not time of decision making at all for the Thunder or anybody else within the organization. It's observation time, it's improvement time. He's working with a shooting coach to get better. And we talked about this before the season started. A lot of times, you get worse before you get better at shooting because you do have to change the way you've been doing something. I mean, if I had to change the way that I had to do production or podcasting or whatever, I might get worse. You know, if I'm like, hey, the Athletic's like, hey, we got to use a completely new program. Like I might get worse at what I do than I am now. I'd be slower. It wouldn't be as effective. I might mess up a few things here and there, but eventually I would start to get it. Like, I think it's the same thing with Josh. Like he's changing the way he's shooting. And even if it's like little tweaks here and there, that takes time. And you have to be willing to go down this road with the Thunder and with a guy like Josh, because I think that Josh is in the long-term plans of the Thunder. Can that change in 3 years? Sure. But like, as of now, like I think you just can't like jump ship with anybody. I mean, just look at Poku, for crying out loud, for, you know, what happened to him between year two and three. You know, I don't think anybody would have predicted that we'd see a version of Poku where the game is slowed down for him and he's able to defend well and make good plays and actually shoot the basketball. Like, that's been like, what? Like, he can, I don't know if he can keep up a plus 40% rate from three, but if he can keep up a, you know, 38% or something like that from three, like, holy smokes, that would have been a pipe dream, you know, last year.
Yeah.
So to jump ship on a 20-year-old, or to like have this like discourse about a 20-year-old, like, I know that, you know, Twitter and Reddit culture is just all about like what's happening now and like how do I evaluate it and like let me get the smartest take and let me get my take off first. Like, that's not this team. It's just like, it's just not how this team is gonna. It's not one how the. I don't think this is not. It's not how the Thunder are gonna handle things. Like, they see the long view. They see the long road that they want to go down. But like, I don't. I think we should recognize that too as fans of the team, and not jump ship on anybody yet, especially a guy that they picked sixth in the draft, just one draft ago. You know, it's just not time yet.
Yeah, it's wild to think about. Shea, at the same point in his career, he was averaging 27 minutes a game. So he was only three games fewer than Josh at that time.
Yeah.
When he was 20 years old. And he was putting up 11-3-3, shooting under 50% from the field, shooting 48%. And like, that was obviously a way different scenario. He's on a veteran team, but he was still getting a lot of minutes on the Clippers.
Yeah, he was.
And then we saw what that jump was from like 20 to 21. And then from 21 to 22, and he just like kept jumping. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, you can't project that type of a jump for someone like Josh Giddey, because that happens so rarely. Like, what we're seeing from Shea is a really unique thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens to guys, but it doesn't happen to every single young player.
Yeah.
But Giddey's going to get better. And I think there are legitimate concerns with Giddey.
Without a doubt,
that have been there from the point he was drafted.
Yeah.
And we're going to see how those play out long term. But for me, it's like trying to come to a conclusion on fit when Chet is not playing. Like, I keep coming back to this idea that Chet is not playing. Like, the number one thing about this season is Shea's jump. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because when you have a player jump from a really solid, like borderline all-star to someone who could be an all-NBA player, that is messed for your franchise.
Yeah.
But the number two most important thing of this season is that Chet Holmgren is not playing.
Yeah.
It is the second most important thing, because he would change everything. If you're worried about Giddey's defense, well, guess what? Having a like elite rim protector behind him is going to help with that a lot. If you're worried about Giddey's offense, well, guess what? Having like a 7-footer who can shoot potentially like 40% from three one day is going to help a lot. Having like another outlet for this offense,
a rim roller as well. I mean,
a rim roller as well,
and having somebody like a big target to throw to that they just don't have. Like, they, as like good as Poku has been this year, like, Poku's a fraction of the talent that Chet Holmgren has. You know,
right?
Chet was picked second, and also, not only are they missing Chet this year, I mean, next year, this, everything is going to change so much. I think it's going to blow Thunder fans' minds, because the addition of Chet and the addition of whoever they get, even if they pick seventh, could change the complexion of the entire team. I mean, I think this next draft is really, really good. I've spent a little bit of time watching college basketball, and it's like, wow, there are some legitimately very good players that are going to be in the 7-8-9 range, even if that's where the Thunder land. I think that you have the potential to draft a true difference maker at that level. Can they be like your number one guy? Like, I don't know. Not impossible, honestly, that some of those guys could be number one guys. But it's a very good draft. It's a very, very good draft. And so everything you think about the Thunder this year is going to drastically change next year. Drastically. So getting all invested and all dug in on this iteration of the Thunder is a fool's errand. It's not going to happen. Like, this is not it. This is not it. It's not even close to what it's going to be.
It's why the I'm realizing the evolution or the next step of the choose dumb mindset is choosing dumb is not just about rooting for the team to win each night. It's focusing on the positives each night because, like, it's really all we have right now.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm focusing on the negatives, like, it just, it's not going to be worth it for me long term because everything is going to change. So if I can just see little progressions from these guys all throughout this season and then come into next season with who we, I think most Thunder fans acknowledge will probably be, or we expect to be, the second best player on this team in Chet Holmgren.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then we can start evaluating, okay, how does this all fit together? How does Shea and Giddy and Chet all work together?
Right.
Without him in the picture, like, it's fun to watch these guys individually, but it kind of goes back to last year with Shea, where it's like, we're making it so hard on Shea. It's like he's wearing, like, ankle weights as he's trying to develop.
Yeah.
Because this system and the environment, whether it's like the lack of shooting or just the lack of guys who can do other things getting to the rim, but all of that is going to start working itself out next year.
Yeah. And also, this will actually make Shea better. Because if he can operate like this and score 30 a game, I think how much easier the game is going to feel for him.
Oh, my gosh. If he can score 30 against that New Orleans defense with Herb Jones and Jose Alvarado, and then come back next year, and now all of a sudden they have to worry about Chet in the corner, whoever they draft at 6 or 7, please, God, let them be a shooter as well.
Yes.
That would be incredible.
Well, and by the way, Shea gets better every year. He's gotten better every single year from, like, his teenage years on. Like, he's been better. So, all right. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. Hope you guys are doing well. Get well soon, Al. We will talk to you guys again on Friday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.